The confirmation came during the 53rd session of the UN Human Rights Council. This goes into much more detail. You may read the whole thing in the World of Radio IO group, including this part. On 22 October 2022, an Iranian judiciary official called for BBC News Persian to be
Holly Tanner.
And Justin Weaver.
We're from Something to Talk About, and you're listening to 90.7 FM.
WGXC, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
On Saturday, July 22nd, turn out or tune in to Wave Farm for a day of percussion at the Marimba Tree in celebration of Charles Staub's Churl Proscenium. Charles Staub's Churl Proscenium will be the 13th installation at Wave Farm's Art Park. And on Saturday, July 22nd, it'll be inaugurated from noon to 6 p.m. with a day of percussionist performances. Those percussionists include Lisa Stoneberg and Leah Bowden, Zuki Legba and special guests, Chris Corsano and Bobby Previtt. And Saturday, July 22nd's performances are part of Upstate Art Weekend, which is at Wave Farm and many other locations. Tune in or turn out to a day of percussion at the Marimba Tree in celebration of Charles Staub's Churl Proscenium, Saturday, July 22nd from noon to 6 p.m. in the Wave Farm Art Park in Acre. There are so many things to do in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, including on Saturday, August 19th from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., it's time for the Deep in the Valley 2023 Festival. Raven Sings the Blues presents a second year of Psych Jam experimental country and folk bands performing, this year with Riley Walker, $75 Bill, Garcia Peoples, Sun Watchers, The Weeping Bong Band, Gold Dust, Ned Collette, and Gliders performing. That's at the From the Ground Brewery in Red Hook on Saturday, August 19th, the Deep in the Valley Festival. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
90.7 FM.
Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information on any of these stories. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that Catskill School Board member Ryan Oswald said recently that board members are not allowed to speak to anyone, including the press, regarding board business. The New York State School Boards Association recommends school boards not reply to public comments, but acknowledges that replying is allowed. At a Catskill School Board meeting on July 5th, second grade teacher and Catskill parent April Ormerod said, quote, "I regularly attend these board meetings, and yet so many things still come as a surprise to me. I learned recently that we've lost our special education director. This is the 11th director we've dealt with as parents of a child in this school district. Our daughter is only entering ninth grade. It's concerning, and we have to ask why. There's never any ability for discourse. How can the community become part of the discussion? How can the board represent our students, our families, and community members when there doesn't seem to be a chance for that? I'd like the board to consider how to begin to allow the community to be heard. How can the taxpayers and the parents and employees communicate with the board? Often I've heard members say they wish they knew or how they can find out, and my question is, how can we open that up? How can we engage the community so that we have a picture from the staff, the parents, and the community about the concerns going on? Unquote. The Greenville School Board, by contrast, recently had a parent oppose a library book, and the board held a moderated session of open discussion groups where parents could openly voice their concerns through dialogue. So locally, it is possible for school boards to respond to the concerns of the community. Greenville School Board President Tracy Young said, quote, "We were happy to host the discussion groups. They were very well attended. The people shared from their hearts very respectfully and allowed the board to view things from many perspectives. All of the information was captured, and we had a mechanism that allowed us to capture feelings and sentiments that maybe weren't addressed by the specific questions that were on people's minds," unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. The Times Union reports that over 2 years after New York legalized cannabis, just the second Capital Region retail cannabis store opened July 7th in Rensselaer County. The Stage 1 dispensary is in the town of Rensselaer on the first floor of a former bank building where the vaults have been kept in their original condition and are being used to store inventory. The store is owned by Nathaniel Innes, Galena German Innes, Suji Mirsky, and Joshua Mirsky, who has run a recording studio in Albany for more than a decade. Another cannabis store opens July 8th in Broome County. Governor Kathy Hochul said, quote, "With these new dispensaries opening in New York, we are providing safer product to New Yorkers while furthering our ambitious goals for equity in New York's cannabis laws," unquote. But New York has been criticized for the slow rollout of retail sales, with no stores open yet in Greene, Columbia, Ulster, or Dutchess counties, and few opened anywhere in the state. Hochul has not yet signed a bill that would allow New York's more than 200 licensed growers to temporarily sell their crops to tribal nations across the state, because the stores that were supposed to be open are not. Assemblyperson Donna A. Lupardo, a Broome County Democrat who chairs the Assembly's Agricultural Committee, said, quote, "After months of uncertainty surrounding New York's adult-use cannabis market rollout, desperation is building among the state's cannabis farmers. They had been stranded with 250,000 pounds of unsold cannabis products from the 2022 season. The current pace of new retail openings will not resolve this issue, and this product is losing value every day as we wait," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And Mid-Hudson News reports that as of July 6th, the New York State Department of Labor no longer allows employers to impose mandatory overtime for nurses. Mandatory overtime for nurses is now only allowed in a healthcare disaster, a declaration of emergency, or when required for safe patient care, such as during an unforeseen emergency or an ongoing medical or surgical procedure. New York State Department of Labor Commissioner Roberta Reardon said, quote, "This new law prevents burnout and empowers these essential workers to continue providing exceptional care to New York families statewide," unquote. Employers must notify the Department of Labor if they do impose mandatory overtime because of an emergency situation. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
After the July 4th fireworks, history itself is still under attack. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast.
What to the American slave is your 4th of July?
So asked Frederick Douglass, speaking to the Rochester Ladies Anti-Slavery Society on July 5, 1852. Douglass escaped slavery around the age of 20, and by the time he gave this speech at 34, was a renowned abolitionist, author, and orator.
I answer, a day that reveals to him more than all other days of the year the gross injustice and cruelty to which he is a constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham.
Douglass's powerful words and tireless organizing helped educate and mobilize the nation for abolition, to support the Underground Railroad, and ultimately to wage an incredibly costly civil war to permanently stamp out slavery. His words, indeed his life, stand as a striking example of why we need a deep, critical understanding of our unvarnished national history if we hope to address the problems that now confront us. Yet a well-organized movement is spreading to obscure and obliterate much of our history, to ban books and to compel the teaching of a sanitized rendition of our difficult and often bloody past. One of the seminal texts that focuses on ignored or suppressed U.S. history is the classic book by the late historian Howard Zinn, A People's History of the United States. Since its publication in 1980, more than 4 million copies have been printed. The book presents a sweeping account of everything from the genocide perpetrated by Christopher Columbus to the forgotten heroes and the struggles for labor rights, women's rights, and the peace movement. The book became so popular that Zinn and publisher Anthony Arnov put out a companion volume, Voices of a People's History of the United States, packed with source material, including writings, speeches, and more from scores of historical figures that have mostly been shut out of the orthodox histories, the major media, the standard textbooks, the controlled culture, as they write in the book's introduction.
When I became a historian, I already knew that I was not going to be neutral.
That's Howard Zinn explaining the book on the Democracy Now! NewsHour in 1999. Zinn and Arnov began producing live readings from Voices, with prominent actors and writers presenting these historical texts, bringing them to life. Oscar winner James Earl Jones presented Frederick Douglass's critique of the 4th of July in his well-known Basso Profundo.
At a time like this, scorching irony, not convincing argument, is needed. Oh, had I the ability and could reach the nation's ear, I would today pour forth a stream, a fiery stream of biting ridicule, blasting reproach, withering sarcasm, and stern rebuke. For it is not light that is needed, but fire. It is not the gentle shower, but thunder. We need the storm, the whirlwind, the earthquake. The feeling of the nation must be quickened. The conscience of the nation must be roused. The propriety of the nation must be startled. The hypocrisy of the nation must be exposed, and the crimes against God and man must be proclaimed and denounced.
Howard Zinn died in 2010, but his work continues. Anthony Arnov and Haley Pessin co-edited a new volume, Voices of a People's History of the United States in the 21st Century, Documents of Hope and Resistance. Like its predecessor, the book also covers movements, but from recent decades, including the opposition to the invasion and occupation of Iraq, to the uprising in Ferguson, Missouri, for racial justice, to Occupy Wall Street, the Me Too movement, and resistance to the Trump administration.
I was lucky to have A People's History of the United States as one of the textbooks that we read.
That's Haley Pessin speaking on Democracy Now!
I really read it voraciously in a way that no textbook had ever really grabbed my attention.
That very influence on young students is the target of the fast-growing far-right organization called Moms for Liberty, claiming to have grown to 285 chapters with 100,000 members since its founding in 2021. The group seeks to control school curriculum, banning topics its white leadership deems offensive. Moms for Liberty just held its annual convention in Philadelphia, the birthplace of the U.S. Constitution and the first city Frederick Douglass reached in his daring escape from slavery in 1838. Most of the major GOP presidential contenders addressed the pro-censorship gathering, including Donald Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, while thousands protested outside. As threats to free speech and the teaching of our nation's genuine history mount, it's worth recalling the answer Benjamin Franklin gave to a member of the public who asked him in 1787 about the new Constitution he'd just helped draft. Do we have a republic or a monarchy? Franklin replied, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it." I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
So social media has been overrun with reports about yellow moths infestating the area. They've been spotted all up and down the Hudson River Valley. So much so that the city of Hudson put out a press release on the issue, a spongy moth advisory. And spongy moths were earlier known in a less politically correct time as gypsy moths. Regions across the Hudson statement says regions across New York State are currently experiencing an outbreak of the spongy moth. The spongy moth is considered an invasive species known for its broad diet and potential to cause damage to plant life, particularly for shade trees. While a healthy tree can withstand some defoliation, locating spongy moths on your property can be serious but not necessarily fatal for affected trees. Please note that recommendations included in this advisory may protect individual tree or small areas, but they will not erase a local spongy moth population now or in future years. They tell you can identify adult spongy moth females as white with brown markings that resemble an inverted V pointing toward the head. Adult spongy moth males are brownish with black markings and have a wingspan of 1 to 1.25 inches. And these are the ones you see flying. The adult spongy moths most commonly lay eggs on trees, but masses can be found on the side of buildings, signs, trailers, and other outdoor surfaces. And the spongy moth egg masses are dark brown clumps protected by a light-colored fuzzy covering. Hatchling caterpillars are small, dark brown to black and fuzzy. As they grow, they lighten in color and have a display of 2 rows of colored spots, 5 pairs of blue and 6 pairs of red. The pupae are dark brown and hairy and about 2 inches long. Large populations of spongy moth caterpillars can defoliate trees and shrubs, leading to stress, weakened growth, and increased vulnerability to other pests and diseases. They are attracted to oak, willow, apple, crabapple, white birch, white witch hazel, mountain ash, basswood, linden, pine, Douglas fir, and spruce, but will feed on a wide variety of trees, including maple, cherry, walnut, hickory, and chestnut. The recommended actions to take is manual removal using gloves or trapping, putting a burlap cloth flap trap or sticky trap on tree. Go to the City of Hudson's Facebook page for more information about the spongy moth infestation locally.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts that a widespread heavy rainfall event is scheduled for this area Sunday afternoon into Monday, and it could lead to flash flooding, and then warm temperatures come into the area. Sunday, there's a 60% chance of rain and possibly thunderstorms after 5 p.m. Some of the storms could produce heavy rain with a high of just 80 degrees and a wind from the southeast 5 to 8 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Then on Sunday night, there's a 90% chance of rain and possibly a thunderstorm, mainly before 8 p.m., and the rain could be heavy at times, with a low around 63, and 1 to 2 inches of rain is possible on Sunday. Monday, there's a 60% chance of rain again, with showers and possibly a thunderstorm in the area, with a high of 77, low around 62 Monday night, with a 30% chance of rain. Tuesday, there's just a 20% chance of rain or thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 83 and a low around 62. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
Good morning, WGXC listeners. You're listening to the Campbell Hudson Sports Report by our very own Dan Witowski.
Yay!
Thank you. Hello. Good morning, Rachel. Good morning, Matthew. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Dan. It's nice to be here with you.
Thank you, Kelly, for that miraculous introduction. Thank you. So there's a couple of things I want to talk about that is happening in the sports world this week. So basically, if you guys watched, I believe it was last week or so, Domingo Germán pitched a perfect game for the New York Yankees. Now, a perfect game is where you face 27 batters and all 27 go down. He became the fourth pitcher in Yankees history to pitch a perfect game and became the 24th pitcher in Major League history to win to pitch a perfect game, and became the first ever Dominican-born player to win a perfect game, to pitch a perfect game.
Thank you. Perfect game. Can we hear somebody say strikeout?
Strike out.
Wow, that was strong.
That was strong.
You're out.
Yeah, ow.
Wow.
Okay, cuckoo.
So that was a big celebration then, no doubt, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard in Major League Baseball to pitch a perfect game at all, but to to have a be the first ever Dominican-born player to do it. It's just like, wow.
And how are the Yankees doing overall?
They stink.
They stink.
You know what?
They are stinking up a storm.
So Yankees.
Rangers stinks.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean
yeah,
the Rangers Texas Rangers for the baseball team?
No, his Rangers stink.
Oh, okay.
The hockey Rangers.
Well, we're gonna get to that in a minute.
Okay.
So the Yankees stink, and what
the Rangers stink.
I mean, I'm a Yankees fan myself, but I mean, even I'm.
Well, thank you.
Even though I know that they're messing up.
What are their chances of making the playoffs this year, Dan?
50%.
50%. Okay. Well, you've heard it here. Dan makes another prediction: 50% chance of Yankees making playoffs. It's like sounds like the weather. What is the other story or stories?
Just so you guys know, if you guys are Giants fans like myself, Giants training camp starts up actually July 26th of this year, which is pretty good.
This month, yeah.
Yeah, this month, which is, I think is I'm going to one of the training camps. I've never been to one before.
Cool.
So I'm actually really looking forward to going to that.
Where is the training camp?
It's at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center in East Rutherford, New Jersey. It's right by MetLife Stadium.
Oh, so you're going to attend one of the like training days and just
yes, they have a lot of training camps open to the public this year, so I'm going to be able to attend one of them.
Cool.
I've never been. I've never been to New Jersey either, so it's going to be good.
Okay.
Well,
yeah. Well,
we're talking to two people, Mr. Princeton guy and Mrs. Brunswick person.
Okay.
And you were also going to report on the Yankees Athletics.
I did that. That was the first game. The last thing I wanted to report was I recently took a trip to New York City to Madison Square Garden to watch the Rangers play.
And you mentioned this to us a while back.
Yeah.
It was the last
regular season game, and they ended up losing due to two goals that were called back. Mm-hmm. One was called off. Because of an offsides call that was called back.
Yeah.
And then the other one was supposedly, I don't know where the heck they got this, but the player supposedly kicked the puck into the net.
Right.
And that's why it was called no goal. So basically, we could have ended up winning 3-2, but we ended up losing 2-1.
So here's the thing that I think might. You know, the listeners would want to know is what's it like to be at an actual New York Rangers hockey game? Some people may have never even been to a hockey game. What's it like? The atmosphere
was so cool.
Yeah.
The Rangers fans are absolutely passionate about the Rangers. They, if something doesn't go their way, they just, wow. I had really good seats too, so basically I was.
Where, how close were you?
I was in section 101, row 15.
Right.
So it was like really close to the ice.
Yep. And near center ice?
No, it was near. It was near the
goal.
Near the goal. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, that's where I was, and it was completely
a good view.
Good view. Very good view.
A good view. A lot of people wearing Rangers attire.
Yeah. It was completely sold out.
Yeah.
I was actually lucky to get tickets. It was sold out.
Yeah. So exciting, right? And it's in Manhattan, you know, New York,
Madison Square Garden. The Rangers fans and the Knicks fans from Madison Square Garden are just absolutely on another level.
Cool.
I've been to a Knicks game before too, and it was a long time ago, but it was.
So, would
you better be careful before they go after you.
Would you recommend people go see?
I would recommend go seeing a Ranger game. It's like that was my first ever Ranger game. It was the best experience I ever had.
You know, my dad and I are a big fan of New York Yankees, and. There's a TV show of Seinfeld, George Costanza, work for New York Yankees too, and he have a baseball field back of his office of New York Yankees.
Yeah, actually, George Costanza in that episode works for George Steinbrenner at Yankee Stadium. So outside his office, you can actually see the field for Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, because I love Yankees very much, too.
And I do, too.
You've been listening to the Camp Hill Sports Report. I've been your host, Dan Wachowski. Have a good day, WGXC listeners.
Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that Columbia County Sheriff Don Krapf says the corrections officers he oversees can cooperate with federal immigration agents, but the law enforcement officers he oversees cannot. Croft sent the Times Union a lengthy statement on his conflicting policy after an incident last month when two members of the Board of Supervisors and Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson waited outside the sheriff's office for a man who did not emerge from the building at his release time. Johnson and Hudson Third Ward Supervisor Michael Shimides were eventually told he was no longer there, as Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers had taken him away. Croft had previously announced a non-cooperation policy with ICE, but now his officers were cooperating. But Croft claims he was only cooperating partially, saying, quote, "The extent to which DCJS shares data with federal authorities is unknown to me, but I can state confidently that my office did not notify ICE of this individual's presence in the Columbia County Corrections Facility," unquote. So now Croft is saying that the non-cooperation policy does not apply to his office's corrections division, only the deputies he oversees. Supervisor Chimides said, quote, "The interpretation that the policy only applies to part of the sheriff's office is a surprise to me, and it's confusing. If you look at the policy itself, it says the sheriff's office. If you look through the document it was part of, it defines the CCSO as having multiple divisions, and it describes the policy as being CCSO policy. So I haven't seen any prior information implying the policy was only geared toward the law enforcement division," unquote. Croft's written policy says, quote, "The Columbia County Sheriff's Office has a welcoming and inclusive policy towards immigrants in Columbia County," unquote, and, quote, "The Columbia County Sheriff's Office does not actively participate in immigration enforcement," unquote. Columbia County Sanctuary Movement co-founder Brian McCormick said, quote, "The policy very clearly states it's for the Columbia County Sheriff's Office. It does not specify it's for a particular subset of employees," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
We're talking today with Brian McCormick, who's with the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. And recently there was some controversy about the sheriff, Don Drapp, down in Columbia County, because he actually turned over somebody detained by the county sheriff's department over to ICE, despite clear county policy not to do so. His argument was, well, the rule only applied to law enforcement individuals, not corrections staff. So Brian, how do people sort of react into what the sheriff is saying about this distinction?
Well, thank you for having me on today. I think the public is outraged regarding the sheriff's response, his office's response to this incident. They have changed their story in how this occurred, why it occurred, and if it was authorized by this policy. We have had folks rally outside of the sheriff's office, including the child of the member who was given to ICE by the sheriff's office. And we've also had a lot of participation in public discourse, including the recent public safety committee, to express our concerns around the violation of the policy.
You know, it was interesting to see that actually a number of elected officials apparently had gone or were planning to go to the sheriff's department to deal with this person when they were released. So certainly showed a lot of community support. Has this person actually been now deported? What is this person's status at this moment?
Yeah, we were very relieved to have overwhelming community support from elected officials, employers, and family members, as well as other members of the sanctuary movement, to welcome this community member back home. And unfortunately, the sheriff's department decided that behind closed doors and without divulging information, they were going to collaborate with ICE on that day. At this moment, the individual, our member, is currently detained in Batavia, in the Buffalo Federal Immigration Detention Center, and he's awaiting his first hearing.
How did, you know, after this discussion at the recent Columbia County Board of Supervisors meetings, where apparently a number of officials expressed their displeasure with the sheriff's action and heard the sheriff's contention as to what the policy does and doesn't do, is the Board of Supervisors planning any type of, you know, follow-up action to deal with this situation?
I think there's certainly ongoing conversations on what actions can be taken. Unfortunately, this policy is a policy within the department. And while we do believe strongly that this policy is in violation, there is nothing stopping the sheriff from rescinding it. And in fact, he has already proposed draft amendments to this policy in order to make collaboration with ICE easier. So there's certainly a group of